Simply Focus mit Elva Czerny and Dominic Gilda for Live and Joyandy.
Hi, and welcome to this new episode. Please welcome your hosts, Elfie Czerny and Dominic Godin.
Hello and welcome back from Santa Fe. We're here at the house of Thrana Nelson and Victor Nelson, and we had a wonderful week with Thanksgiving dinner and just lovely conversations with you.
We are very excited to talk with Thrana today about her new book and about systemic ideas and solution focus, and to give a better understanding of her work and discuss some aspects of your new book and your work around systemic thinking and solution focus. So thank you for being here with us again.
You're quite welcome, and I look forward to this.
We're excited to have already episode number 40 today.
My.
Kind of celebration.
And you're the first guest that is on our podcast in a single podcast for a second time. So congratulations on that too.
Okay.
So last time we asked you what fascinates you with solution focus, and this time we want to ask you, because your book is called Solution Focus Brief Therapy with Families, what fascinates you about Solution Focus Brief Therapy with Families?
Well, I think what's most fascinating is that there are so many more things to think about than when we have just one person in front of us. Because in Solution Focused Brief Therapy with Families, I'm thinking about the whole family, whether they're there or not. I'm thinking about each member of the family and their role in whatever we're talking about and what resources they might have to bring to a conversation or to managing a difficulty. So that's what's fascinating to me, is to watch and to listen to all of the different patterns of interaction.
And that's actually the way it started, Brief Family Therapy Center, with the work with families, isn't it?
Absolutely. With interaction, it's a relational approach from the Brief Family Therapy Center that, of course, got it from the Mental Research Institute, where they talked about interaction. That was what they talked about. So the BFTC then picked up on that.
So, Rana, how did you come up with the idea for this book, and what brought you to write this book and to see the importance of writing this book?
Well, there are so many solution-focused books out there that are absolutely wonderful, and many of them seem to deal with a certain particular singular kind of concern or situation, like solution-focused with children or solution-focused with trauma or depression or problem drinking. And as a systemic therapist, I learned that those are content issues, and that what we work with more in systemic work, and I believe in solution-focused work, is the process. How are people interacting with each other? How is that helping them? How is that keeping them stuck? And what can we do to help them change so that they get the kind of life that they want? But it's really all about relationships and interaction.
So Solution Focus Brief Therapy with Families, kind of families not as content, but as the context, as the interactional.
That's a good way of thinking about it, because sometimes it's family therapy where people come in, but they have so many different content kinds of things that they want to talk about, problems with children, problems with extended families, problems with money, with career, with anything. Those are what we would call content issues. And we're interested in how does the family interact about those kinds of issues, because they tend to interact. We people tend to interact around different kinds of situations and content areas in the same way. So if a couple comes in and they've got concerns about their teenager, I might ask them, and we might talk about their parenting with small children, because there are some similarities. And by talking about the similarities, we can maybe get unstuck and talk more about how they can parent their teenagers in ways that are satisfying and produce what they want out of life, rather than what so many of us do with teenagers, which is complain. We tend to complain about teenage issues when they come into therapy.
And when we came into your house, the first book we saw was The Interactional View.
Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah.
So your work has really always been within this interactional or systemic view. And what we realized, coming from Austria and Switzerland, from the German-speaking countries, is that systemic and systemic is not always the same.
No, I have learned that too. In fact, for a long time, I was quite confused, because it seemed like there were a number of people from Europe who didn't want to talk about systemic therapy because they didn't like it. And I thought, I don't understand. That didn't make sense to me. And so as I listened more, I began to understand that what they were talking about was a particular kind of therapy. And systemic therapy is not a particular kind of therapy. It's a way of thinking or a paradigm.
So what is this paradigm all about?
The paradigm is all about seeing everything as each part in connection with every other part in some way. Some small ways, some large ways, but always connected. One metaphor that people will often use to talk about wholeness, which is one of the concepts of systems thinking, is to use a mobile, like you would use for a small child or a baby, and how when you touch one part of it, all of the rest of the parts move also. They have to adapt to the change in the one part. And that's what we see with a system, is that I can work with an individual and help them change whatever difficulty they're having, and then they go back into their normal family, work life, social life, and everything else is the same. And so it's very difficult for them then to maintain the changes because the other parts haven't had to adjust yet. So when I see a family, then they're all there, so I can help them adjust to whatever change is taking place.
So everything's connected. That fits well to the idea that a small change in one part can lead to big change in the whole system, and also to the observation that sometimes it doesn't even matter who comes to us. As soon as they start changing, things start to change in their families and their surroundings. So this one thing, one part, kind of the connectedness, what are other parts in your systemic thinking that are relevant?
Well, I mentioned one a little bit earlier, the idea of process versus content, that we're more interested in helping the family think about how they interact around the difficulties they're having, rather than trying to say, well, this is how you would fix it. We're not fixers. I might have ideas about other families and how they have worked around certain problems. I've certainly got ideas about how my family does things, but I don't know how it's going to work with a different family. And so I think that's one of the things about solution focus that makes it so much more rich, is that I can remember that I have to work with the family on how they interact, not how I would interact around that. So process versus content, that's another one. You know, for example, if there's a difficulty in a family with a child who always has notes coming home from the teacher that the child has not done the homework, okay? So the parents get upset because they don't understand. They saw the child doing the homework. They know that the homework was in the backpack, and so they want to know why. Why didn't you give the teacher the homework? Why didn't you do this? You're supposed to do that. If you don't do this, if you don't do your homework, you're going to get a failing grade and your life is going to be completely horrible for the next 400 years. And, you know, we get into those so easily with people that we care a lot about and we're emotionally connected to. And solution focus helps us break that pattern and say, so if the child, or when the child rather, when the child is doing the homework and the teacher is not calling you anymore to say the child is doing something wrong, what will be different? How will your lives be like in your family? And the family will say, you mean around schoolwork? And I say, well, schoolwork or anything else, you know, dinner time or getting ready for bed or planning an outing on the weekend, you know, just how will things be different? And then they start to think in bigger ways.
That reminds me of our work that we do with organizations and leaders coming that want to have a better meeting or a better presentation. And one way is to work on their presentation or on their meeting. And the way we tend to work is to work on the outcome or the preferred future.
Right.
So how would that show afterwards in your team, for example, in your life, in your leadership life? So kind of this idea.
And I go a little bit further and say, how will you be interacting with each other? How will you be talking with your children? How will they be talking with you? What kinds of things will you be doing? So it's much more about the interaction among the people than how will you, a singular person, be different.
And I think it's really the word different that makes the difference here. It's talking about differences that are important, that make a difference.
Right, because I could give them all kinds of ideas that would be different from what they're doing, but they might not make a difference to them.
Yeah. In your book, you also mention other concepts like circularity, for example, or homeostasis. And what we realize in the German-speaking countries is that people who use systemic ideas, they derive their interventions from the theory, like they say, oh, circularity and homeostasis. So mm-hmm. we have to, and that's one, I think, one big misunderstanding in my view of systems theory and application of system theory. So they say the therapist or the coach or the organizational consultant has to come up with good hypothesis of the system. And we have to look very closely because it's a complex system. So we have to look closer to the details and finding out how it already works. In solution focus, we do something different.
Very different. And I think so much it comes from systems thinking because, well, first of all, it's not a theory. It's a way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And von Bertalanffy, who gave us the basic idea of systems ideas, called it system thinking, not systems and not systems theory. And so it's a way of thinking. It's more like the larger paradigm or belief system that one has. And the early models of family therapy that used systems ideas went beyond the linear thinking that we had been using in psychotherapy, which was something happens and then it causes something else. So something bad happens in your childhood and it causes you to have these kinds of difficulties as you're an adult. And somewhere along the line, I began to think this, and so did others, that in systems thinking, where we talk about circularity, it's still linear. Okay, let me try to explain. Because if we're talking about a structure of a family and the reason that they're stuck is because they have this structure that's not working, and that's kind of a systemic idea because it involves everybody and everything, but we're still talking about causality. And so circular causality, if it's really understood well, means that there is no causality. And I like solution focus because we really say we not only don't need to know the cause, but it's better not to know. It's irrelevant. And so you can put it aside and not think about it anymore because there's nothing you can do about it anyway. So if something bad happens in your childhood, I can't change that. You can't change that. But what we can change is the way that you are managing the memories or the way that you are managing interactions that seem to other people like they're caused by that.
Especially the way you manage interactions in the future.
Absolutely, in the future, because if you can get away from that idea that the reason I'm having this difficulty right now is because of the way I was treated or because of something that happened to me, then you don't have to focus on that anymore. You don't have to say, well, I have to have a catharsis or I have to understand it thoroughly, every single little problem or piece of it. That's painful. It's very painful to remember bad things. So in solution focused, you know, we certainly don't say, well, we don't talk about problems. We can't talk about problems because some people really need to kind of talk about it for a few minutes. But as soon as we can, as soon as we can help them be ready, then we start talking about when this is not bothering you anymore, what's it going to be like? What will be different in your life? What will you be doing? What will other people be seeing? How will you be interacting with them? And just get away from what people believe is the cause completely.
And I think that's one of the biggest differences between systems theory, coaching, or therapy in, well, we don't know about other countries, but in the German-speaking parts. I think one of the other big differences is the way you derive your interventions. And many people that we know who work with systems theory, they derive their interventions from the theory or from the, you know, the paradigm. And solution focus was created completely different. There were these system thinking ideas, and then there was the client, and derived from practice, of course, with the ideas in mind.
And then there was the client. And even at the Mental Research Institute, where things were developed uniquely for each client or each client system and each difficulty, it still was derived from these basic ideas. Whereas Steve and Insu and the other people at the Brief Family Therapy Center started paying more attention once they got their heads turned away from those interventions, they started being curious about what does the client say is useful about what we do, not just about what they want in the future, but we pay very careful attention to what we would call feedback from the clients about whether or not something is working. And that's not feedback in the traditional sense of, I'm going to give you feedback about your podcast now. It was a very good one, or you could have done this differently. It's feedback that says what you're doing is working, so keep doing it, or what you're doing is not working, so do something different. That's the difference, I think, that instead of the top down from systems and then a model or approach to the client, we go from the client back up.
So I can understand both people, the one who say, well, solution focus is about what's working with the client, it's not a systems thinking approach, and the other who say it's a system thinking approach.
Paradigm. Mm. System thinking, belief system. If our basic belief system is that everything thing is caused by something else, and that in order to fix the thing that we don't like, we have to figure out what caused it and take it all apart like a car. But human interaction is not like that. Human interaction is about we don't have to find that thing that made it bad. All we have to do is watch what's happening. Watch the way people interact. If it's working for them, then we don't mess with it. We don't try to change it. But if we see that the way that they're interacting, or if they say that the way they're interacting is making things worse, or we can see that it might be making worse, like yelling at a teenager about not doing the homework, it's like, well, does that work for you? And they'll say, no, we've been trying that for months and it never works. So say, well, then let's try something different. And then we talk, instead of telling them what the different thing is to do, we help them think about what they might do differently that might work and experiment. We are not the experts on what's going to happen in that family. And I think that's a big thing with systemic thinking, is that we're really paying much more attention to the system than we are to the homework or even whether the parents are doing anything right or wrong. They're the ones who decide whether it's right or wrong or helpful or not helpful.
And how do we do that? One topic that you mentioned in the last podcast were relational questions.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they work and how else can we do that?
From a solution-focused perspective as well, because that has its own set of assumptions and premises. I think it's asking in this same example about a child whose homework is not getting done and the teacher is complaining and the parents are angry and the child is frustrated and just wants to, you know, go away. I would say to the parents something like, what do you want for this child? What do you see in this child's future? And they might say something, and I said, I'd like to watch you talk about that, because I'm not sure that you've thought about it very much. I think you've thought about it a bit, but tell me more about what your hopes are for this child. And I think that that's a very systemic and solution-focused way of helping parents think about something other than the problem. The further part is to ask them how they talk to their child about the thing that's important to them, because that's what they want to talk about. And so as a kind of combined solution-focused and systemic therapist, I would watch how they talk and pay attention to particularly the child. So when the parents are talking to the child, I would see something that made sense to the child. I could see on the face or in the way they respond something that makes sense to the child. And so I would ask the child to explain further about that.
So it's a lot about really carefully observing instead of judging, of course, and taking these tiny little signs and make them visible and help people in the system to see those signs, to notice them and to use them for healthier, better interactions.
Exactly. And I have a great example of that with a family who came to see me because their little boy was having problems at school. I think he was 7 or 8 years old. And his doctor had diagnosed him as having attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is very, very common in the States. So I was just asking the family about their lives. And one of the things was, how is this a problem for you? A common question in systemic thinking. How is this a problem for you? And one of the ways it was a problem had nothing to do with school. It was that he couldn't seem to focus, they didn't think. And so on the way home, he would do things that would get his clothes dirty. And the rule was that he was supposed to come home and change clothes before he went outside to play so that he didn't get his school clothes dirty. And his mother was just getting terribly frustrated because she said, every day he comes home and he's got grass stains and rips and dirt all over his clothes, and I have to try to wash them or mend them, and he doesn't understand how important this is. We, you know, and she went on and on and on. So we talked for a while, and I don't remember how that session ended, and I was doing solution-focused work at how they saw their family in the future when he was older. The next time they came back, and she said, I am so upset because last week was good, but this week, yesterday, he came home and his clothes were all dirty again. And his father looked at him and said, in a very different tone of voice, I will say that, but his father said, what were you thinking? And it's so common for parents to say that. What were you thinking? Like, obviously your thinking was bad, and so if I know what you were thinking, then I can tell you the right way to think or whatever. So I said, oh, that's a really good question. I'm curious about that. So I said to the little boy, tell me about how you made the decision on your way home. He said, well, I was walking along and I crossed this bridge and there was a big vine over the ravine, and it just looked like a perfect vine to swing on. And so I really wanted to swing on it. And his parents are kind of looking at him like, oh, you are, no, what is going on? But I got more curious and I said, so what happened then? You saw the vine and you thought, oh, this will be fun to swing on. Then what did you do? And he said, well, then I thought if I swing on the vine, it'll be a lot of fun, but I'll probably get my clothes dirty. And then I'll go home and my mommy will be upset with me. And I said, oh, so you thought thought about that? And he said, yes. And I said, well, but you decided to swing on the vine. And he said, yes, I decided it would be more fun to swing on the vine and I would just deal with it when I got home and mommy was mad at me. So his parents were sitting there like, oh my gosh, what in the world? He actually decided, knowing that there would be a bad consequence to it. And I said to them, well, sure, if he knows the consequence, then it was a choice to do what he did. And I think that that's a much more solution-focused way of working within a systemic approach than straightforward solution-focused or straightforward systemic. I think it's a way to use and to see that solution-focused is very systemic. I was very curious. I wanted to know. They wanted to know. And it all tied in with what they wanted for him and for themselves. So it just all fit together like a puzzle.
I would be curious to find out what happened afterwards, of course.
Well, actually, you want to know what happened afterwards?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're listening to the Simply Focused podcast with Alfie Cherney and Dominic Godat, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.
So we talked more during that session about some other things and how he could make decisions, you know, using that. I say, how can you use that wonderful resource you have for making decisions about other kinds of things? I didn't talk about homework yet, about other kinds of things. And he said, like what? And I said, well, like, are you supposed to make your bed in the morning? And he said, yes. And I said, okay, about making your bed, how I, so we talked about different decisions that mommy and daddy had to make, and they weren't always easy. And sometimes they decided that they would rather do something knowing that it might not turn out well, but they really wanted to do it. So he could see that even grown-ups sometimes have trouble making decisions. And so then they left, and the next week they came back, and they had had a situation where they were washing the car. It was summertime, so they were washing the car, and the mom came out and asked the dad and the little boy to be quieter because she had a headache. And the little boy turned around. He had the hose in his hand, and he turned around and he squirted her. And the parents both just kind of went, oh my, no, this is not. What are you doing? And the little boy kind of looked at him, but then he started laughing. And he had a bucket of soapy water with suds in it. And he picked up some suds and he threw them at his mommy. And then his daddy picked up some suds and threw them at him. And they got into this wonderful water fight.
Aww.
So I said, that's amazing to me, because a water fight can just end up so badly. People can get hurt. You get all wet and you're cold and you have to change clothes and your hair's a wreck. And what about mommy's headache? And she looked at me and she said, I think my headache went away. And they said, yeah, I think we knew that, but we decided that we wanted to have a water fight and have fun, and we would take care of the clothes later.
So different interactions.
Yes, yes. And they began to ask the boy questions about making decisions and how he decided to not give his teacher the homework. And he said, well, I forgot. And they said, oh, I was so proud of them. They said, no, we don't believe that. We don't believe that you forgot. You knew what was in your backpack because your lunch was in the backpack. And he said, oh, yeah. And so then they started talking about how he was afraid of his teacher and some things that were going on at school. And I just sat back in my chair and let the parents take care of it. And that was the last session. I had 3, maybe 4 sessions with them.
It's so beautiful to hear how interactions in all different kind of fields change, like with the water fight. And it might be that that would have happened before, but maybe not. So
maybe not. And with a different family, it would turn out differently.
Yeah.
But if they came back and talked about that, I would start asking them how they have fun. Well, I would talk to the little boy first and say, what happened? And he might say, well, it was an accident. And then the parents could talk to him about how do you prevent accidents. But he said that he just saw his mom and he had the water and he squirted his mom because it was fun. I mean, he was kind of shy about it, not sure what his parents would say. And in another family, they might say, no, that's bad. And then I would say, well, what are some ways that you have fun?
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, we had a podcast with Terry Pichot, and she told us a story of how her dog influences the mood of her clients and how they might start to laugh and how this kind of feeling good in this moment might be relevant in the future. And so this kind of observing in the moment and using this exception here in the room for, well, your future. And it seems to me like this is the same what you're telling me when you work with families and you have these different different interactions in the room, and they realize how they could interact, or they realize how the boy made different decisions and had this wonderful conversation with you, and then they go out and kind of have this as a modeling the conversation and go out and can do more of that too. And sometimes it seems to me like in one-to-one therapy, one-to-one coaching, this aspect gets in the background.
And again, we tend to focus on what's right in front of us. And systemic thinking helps me think beyond that. Now, Terry Pichot is very systemic. She understood that very well from her work with, particularly with Insu. And when she sees that some kind of interaction in the case you're talking about between the dog and the person has a different effect than other kinds of interactions, she would get curious about how can we help this kind of interaction occur in the future. And we talk about that in systemic thinking as isomorphism. How do we help this pattern of the parents and the little boy talking about things and difficulties instead of being angry and frustrated? Because if we can help them talk about schoolwork this way, or the dirty clothes, or the water fight, then they can use that same pattern in other kinds of situations. It's not just modeling. It's actually changing a pattern, believing that if it's a difference that's going to make a difference, then it will show up in other situations.
It's like the water fight. If you use that at what works well in their interaction for the future, then you can use interactions like that much easier.
Well, yeah, and they don't even realize they're doing it. That's one of the difficult things about our work, I think, is who takes credit for the work? Who's the cause of the work? Who made it happen? And the clients, sometimes they'll come back to a session on the next week and say, I was thinking about what you said, and I don't remember what I said. And they'll tell me, and it's like, I didn't say that. But there's something about the interaction that we had that was useful to them, and they just automatically take it. And so it's obviously nothing I did. Well, maybe it was my part of the interaction, but not because I was trying to cause a particular thing.
Also here, the system thinking.
Yes.
Talking about all these things, I kind of wonder what you see solution-focused practitioners without having the systemic ideas do differently, or put the other way. What would you like to see more of?
I would like to see solution-focused practitioners, particularly those who did not have the opportunity to understand systemic thinking in their own early training or in trainings with Insu and Steve or some of the early people. I would like to see them learn more and understand more about systemic thinking, because I think it enriches the work. It expands our vision, so that if somebody has a difficulty with, well, depression is a good example in therapy. So many clients come and they say, they're depressed, and you know, we ask different questions. And so we talk to them about what's your life going to be like in the future when you don't have depression, or what is your preferred future, depending on, you know, how you were trained to do the work. And they'll talk about, you know, they'll be happier, they'll smile more, and we'll ask what else, and come to something that goes along the lines of, I'll be interacting more with my friends. And then a lot of people will ask the next question as, what will your friends notice about you? And I think we can make that picture, well, I know from my perspective, I can make that picture richer and deeper and perhaps more meaningful by saying, how will you be interacting with each other? When your friend notices this about you, how will you respond to your friend? And what will other people who are with you see? We call that reciprocity. When I do something, you respond. And when you do something, when you make that response, then I nod my head as well, or something. We're in interaction with each other. We're not just talking at each other, A to B, and then B to A. It's something happens in the middle that we call co-creation. So I think that's one thing that I really wish systemic ideas could inform more, the training and the understanding of solution-focused work, whether it's organizations or consulting or family work or individual work, any kind of work.
So focusing more on the interactions in the future.
Yes.
And the responses and my response to this response and kind of...
Exactly. That's what makes it circular. That's the circularity of it, is that it's not that I made you do that. It's that in our conversation with each other, this is what happened.
So Rana, you now mentioned what you would like to see solution-focused practitioners to do more of. And your book is not only written for solution-focused practitioners, but also for family therapists in a broader sense. So what would you like to see them to do more of?
Well, of course, because I have integrated solution-focused principles so much into who I am, I would like family therapists to be solution-focused therapists. exists. But I know that's not going to happen. That's not realistic because not everybody wants to or gets into it that deeply. But what I would like to see is a couple of things. The first one is how family therapists can understand that simply because they ask the miracle question or scaling questions or exception questions, that that doesn't make them solution-focused therapists. And that's okay. That's fine. I think the questions can still be good and helpful to them and to the people they work with. But the other thing is that I would like them to see a little more deeply how the solution-focused questions are systemic and how they can be used to enrich the work in a more depth way rather than just, you know, let's suppose a miracle happened. And because so many therapists will ask the miracle question and they say, yes, I use the miracle question to find out what the goals are. And they'll, you know, talk about that. And then they'll say, but it doesn't always work. And I really strongly believe that when somebody is solution focused in their orientation to the work, there's no such thing about whether or not the question works or doesn't work. It always works. Yeah. It's what we do next. It's a process. It's not a question with an answer. It's what else, and the interactions and the other people. And there's just so much more to it. So that's what I did a little bit in the book, is show how the questions can be used in some different family therapy models, just to give people an idea so that they might, the people who are curious about it, so they can begin to see how it could work, how it could be part of what they do.
What else can family therapists find in your book that are not trained with solution focus that might be helpful for their practice and maybe also help to understand solution focused and systemic ideas even better?
Well, unfortunately, I think that there are a lot of people trained in what they call family therapy, but they don't have a very good systemic background. Their foundation is very weak. And I have evidence of that because I teach people who want to be family therapy supervisors. And one of the first things that they have to do is figure out how systemic ideas work in supervision. And because they've been clinicians for anywhere from 2 to 30 years, when they do this, they've forgotten. And they've forgotten that when you're helping family therapists learn, no matter what the approach is, you need to understand the systemic ideas. So one of my hopes is that family therapists would get kind of a refresher on systemic ideas. And in fact, some of the people who have looked at the book have said that. It's got a good orientation to systemic ideas. And then I think there also are a lot of solution-focused therapists, or people who call themselves solution-focused therapists, who either never knew or have forgotten what some of the basic important stance ideas are. Things like small change leads to big change, and you don't need to always know the problem in order to resolve the difficulty. So it's got an overview of systemic stance ideas.
Well, we have a comment here by Eve Lipchick, who says, at the same time that concepts it defines are deep and broad and so well laid out, a comprehensive book like this about solution-focused brief therapy and families has been missing from the literature for a long time.
I am just so amazed that Eve Lipchick, who is one of the people that I consider a founder of this approach, would say that about my book, that she actually read my book and that she would say that, because I admire her so much. Her work around emotions in solution-focused brief therapy was something that was missing for a long, long time. And Steve DeShazer talked about emotions in therapy in workshops, but not very much. And it wasn't until his last book that he really addressed the issue in the publication. So she knows what she's talking about in terms of what's missing in the literature. One of the big reasons I wrote the book was that we have, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, so many books about this issue or that kind of situation. And I got very tired of that, especially when they didn't cover systems. And there were no books on solution focused in family therapy. So I decided, first of all, I wanted to talk more about systems. And second of all, I wanted people to understand that you can use solution-focused brief therapy with families. So I think that's what she's talking about. We have with children, we have with couples, we have with trauma, we have with suicide, we have with a lot of things, but we didn't have anything with the families. One of the good examples of solution-focused with families is a video that Insu did with a family that appears to be very chaotic. They're just all talking over each other, and I would have students, when I was a professor at the university, watch that video, and they would say, I don't know how she did it. Some of of my psychology friends who would watch the video would say, you can't do therapy in that situation. The children are bouncing around the room. You have to get everybody to sit still. And it's like, well, no. So I like to use that example with INSU that, yes, you can use solution-focused therapy with families that are very chaotic.
Beautiful. Thank you, Rana. I'm again curious, if there is one thing, only one thing, you want people to get from your book or like the systemic ideas and solution focus, what is that?
Well, I think if you asked me that later this afternoon or tomorrow or last week, I would have a different answer. But right now, based on our conversation and what I've been thinking, I think it's interaction. Is that if we can be curious about people's interactions, I have such a strong belief that relationships heal. That when people are having difficulties, when they have strong, supportive, caring relationships, it makes everything better. Even if it can't go away, it makes it better. And that's interaction. So when people are having difficulty, if I can help them have more positive interactions that have better outcomes or that people feel better about, so that children don't feel ashamed when the teacher says you're a bad boy because you didn't do your homework. And I mean, that doesn't help him. But if you say to a boy in your interaction, the teacher is a very powerful interaction person to a child, a 7 or 8 year old. If you say, well, I see that your homework for yesterday was in your backpack. How did you do it? And then how can I help you to bring your homework to me? Then it's just going to go better. Mm. The interaction is so important.
What a great message. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So let's come to the challenge of the week.
Okay, the challenge of the week. I think that what I would be pleased about for listeners to do, then I would love to get some feedback about this, is to just watch the interactions around you. It's very difficult to pay attention to your own interactions, even when you know these things and have this idea. But if you just start watching the interactions of people around you, or if you're shopping for the holidays, watch the way people are interacting. I love to watch people in stores and when parents get frustrated with children because they want this or they want that. And just watch the different ways that the parents interact with their children, or the couples interact at the mall, or whatever. Interactions that look good and interactions that don't look so good. Just observe.
And let us know what you see and what you find out.
I love to do this thing, particularly during Christmas time. So thank you very much for this challenge. And well, I can't wait to hear from all of you how this challenge works for you and what you discovered, what you observed, and well, what differences that might make for you observing other interactions. So please let us know and comment on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 40.
And you'll find the book Solution Focus Brief Therapy with Families and other publications from Thorana Nelson in the resource sections of this podcast. So go to www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 40.
And talking about Christmas time, so we will on the 1st of December again start our yearly advent calendar. So please come and visit our website, and we will also send out the information in our newsletter. So if you have not subscribed to our SF on Tour newsletter, we highly invite you to do so and to keep you informed about our advent calendar, which will go from 1st of December to 24th of December. And every day we will open a window with a nice surprise.
And you will hear about that in every podcast until Christmas.
I'm looking forward to it.
So, Rana, thank you very much for this podcast, for this very important conversation we had. Also for the week we could spend with you and Vic and Stacy and Kanan, Stacy's dog. It was such a lovely time here, and we really, really enjoyed and appreciated it.
Thank you. We were very pleased to have you here and enjoyed the time as well.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Bye.
Goodbye.
This was the Simply Focus podcast with Alfie Cherney and Dominic Odat, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.